Today is Friday, the 26th of August, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, many say the U.S. presidential race is like no other in this nation's history.
He says he wants to make America great again, but more and more it seems as though his real message seems to be make America hate again.
Hillary Clinton is a bigot who sees people of color only as votes, not as human beings worthy of a better future.
VOA's Jim Malone is here to talk with us about it. Also ahead, in a connected story, we take you into a plan to get the vote out among African-American women. And VOA Steve Miller has the story of thousands of people being killed in the Philippines since its current president took office. All on today's International Edition. We do start today with U.S. politics. The race between Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump has largely been one of name-calling. So you can hear it again. Here's an example. In Nevada, Clinton accused Trump of unleashing a radical fringe within the Republican Party, including anti-Semites and white supremacists.
He says he wants to make America great again, but more and more it seems as though his real message seems to be make America hate again.
And Trump rejected those allegations, tagging her with another name.
Hillary Clinton is a bigot who sees people of color only as votes, not as human beings worthy of a better future.
We welcome to International Edition once again VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone. Why do you think this race has reached this point, and how did it get there?
I think the straightforward answer, Ira, is that the outlines of this general election campaign between Clinton and Trump were always going to be the challenge for both was to depict the other person as the worst choice, almost a demonization, if you will. The groundwork has been laid early on with attacks on both Clinton and Trump in the primaries, and given the opinion polls that show voters don't have a really favorable opinion of either contender, though somewhat worse for Trump, it looks as though it was always going to be whoever did a better job of demonizing the opponent was going to have the upper hand. And I think that has been what's been driving the latest debate. The Clinton campaign wants to have voters understand that in their view, Trump is not fit to be president. And a lot of this latest business with the so-called alternative right, trying to tie him to that sort of movement, I think is a part of that. And on the other side, Trump wants to make sure voters understand that he's the only candidate for change. She's been a creature of Washington for a couple of decades, and also her untrustworthiness. So that's what he's tried to focus on, especially in connection with the Clinton Foundation stuff.
The language of the campaign is intriguing to me. I don't think I've ever heard language in a campaign, maybe give or take some with Sarah Palin last time. Trump has said he wants to be the tell-it-like-it-is guy, and his language does reflect that. And some of that language is not like the language we have seen in past elections and races.
That's true. Now, on the tell-it-like-it-is point, we've had some murkiness just this week because his signature issue is immigration reform. I'll build the wall. Mexico will pay for it. We're going to stop the flow of illegal immigrants. Trump, perhaps urged by advisors, has hinted he may want to soften the stance of actually having 11 million people in the country illegally removed, deportation being a major part of his program. But he's been back and forth on it this week, and it's causing him problems with his core supporters. It's been a bit undermining the very thing you brought up about tell it like it is. As soon as he appears to be just like any other politician, then his brand is probably in trouble.
Well, how does he get around it?
I think he's been urged by advisors to keep the focus on Clinton, links between the Clinton State Department when she was Secretary of State, the Clinton Foundation, whether people were donating to the foundation to have access to her as Secretary of State. I think the week started out on a positive note for the Trump people. They thought they were making some headway, at least shifting the discussion. But by the end of the week, the discussion was, who's a racist? And, you know, is Trump a product of the far right? If the debate is about Donald Trump and all these negative connotations, I would argue the Trump campaign is losing in that regard. And here, another thing, we got 10 weeks to go. You can't afford to blow a week now. These yeah. candidates are running out of time, and each week is important.
How much does either of the campaigns react to polls?
Well, we used to hear quite a bit from Donald Trump about the polls. When he was up high in the primaries, we heard every speech. Of late, I've not heard much on that. And, yeah, look, the polls are important, not just because, you know, we should take it as gospel, we shouldn't, but the strategies are actually based on the poll ratings. So right now, the Trump campaign has to look at the states where they really feel they can compete, probably places like Ohio and Florida, which are key states. But even those, winning those may not be enough to stave off a Clinton presidency, because she has expanded the number of battleground states, the key states, where she has big leads. So this is going to drive both campaigns now in the weeks to come.
Make sure you join us next week at the same time for the Jim Malone Show here on VOA's International Edition. It's always great to have Jim with us. Let's see how all of this is affecting social media, or shall we say the millennial generation. Andrew Palchevsky is not sitting in the studio. He has some days off, but he wants to talk about this so badly he has volunteered to telephone in. What are you seeing so far, Andrew?
Well, it's not just me that wants to talk about it so badly. It's social media. It really has become a hot-button issue, and it's just the back and forth and vitriol that we see between the campaigns is really mirrored by the supporters going back and forth on social media. But there are two hashtags that are trending today, one that's somewhat related to the U.S. Politics and another one that's celebrating some of our favorite furry friends. So the first one of those is hashtag Women's Equality Day. And this is related to U.S. politics because it's a celebration that marks the ratification of the 19th Amendment, which gave many women in the U.S. the right to vote. So you see a lot of people celebrating that. Of course, this election year, you have Hillary Clinton as the first major party candidate that's a woman that's running for president. So she was tweeting out about this, saying that let's break more ceilings, and also noting that for women of color in the U.S., this didn't necessarily mean the right to vote. They didn't get that till much later. And then on that point, even though it's a, you know, U.S. celebration, a lot of people are using this hashtag Women's Equality Day to talk about places in the world where there isn't equality for women. So they're using this even beyond the United States and the celebration of rights to talk about places where women don't have rights.
Well, we will have a feature dealing with the black women's voting movement in just a few minutes here on International Edition. What else we got going?
Well, we also have hashtag National Dog Day. You know, there's always these days National Ice Cream Day, National, you know, whatever day.
You mentioned that, and Malone is leaving. So go ahead.
He must be a cat person. But hashtag National Dog Day is one of these fun ones because everybody gets to post pictures of their dogs, and you see, you know, famous dogs from movies and things. One tweet that I saw that I thought was pretty interesting was a historical analysis or a historical look at dogs over time. They had a picture of a cave carving of somebody with a dog from 650 BC. So it's a nice way to celebrate our furry friends out there in their different forms, sending out pictures of that. So if you're looking for some much-needed Friday relief, you can go on to social media, look up hashtag National Dog Day. It's probably a lot more interesting and more entertaining to follow that than the political climate, or at least it's going to be you know, fuzzier and nicer pictures than the back and forth that we're seeing in our political fight.
At least it brings a smile to your face, eh?
Yes, and we could use that after that report on the politics. We could all use that for sure.
Andrew Palchevsky, you can get in touch with him on Twitter at APAL. And myself, how do you get in touch with me?
At VOA Millman.
You know, I need you every week, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks, Andrew.
Always happy to help. Good to talk with you.
This is International Edition. Among the top stories we're covering for you, the United States and Russia have their chief diplomats in Geneva talking about ways to bring peace to Syria. A car bomb in Turkey kills at least 11 police officers. Responsibility has been claimed by militants linked to the Kurdish Workers' Party. A French court rules that the burkini cannot be banned in at least one city on the French beach. Aftershocks continue to rattle heavily damaged areas of Italy following the massive earthquake there. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of astronomers using two of the world's most powerful ground-based telescopes have discovered an enormous galaxy that's only 0.01% visible. The remaining 99.9% is made up of dark matter. Dark matter, a so far unknown type of matter, is thought to make up about 20% of the observable universe. The faint galaxy is called Dragonfly 44. It's located within the Coma Cluster, about 321 million light-years from Earth, and is nearly 70,000 light-years across. To make their discovery, the astronomers used the W.M. Keck Observatory and the Gemini North Telescope, which are both located on Mauna Kea in Hawaii. A spectrograph, a device that splits light into separate wavelengths, was installed to help astronomers calculate the amount of dark matter in the galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We continue with International Edition from the Voice of America. Black Girls Vote is a nonpartisan organization working to raise awareness among young African-American women about the importance of political participation. While the main goal of this organization is to register as many eligible female voters as possible, the Black Girls Vote has a bigger objective that goes even beyond the election. VOA's Faiza El-Masri reports. Faith Lapidus narrates.
The presidential election is less than 3 months away, and while some Americans already know who they plan to vote for, others are still undecided, and then there are others who are just reluctant to participate. Nikedra Nike Robinson, founder of Black Girls Vote, sees that reluctance in many young African-American women, despite the growing power of the minority vote.
We know that in 2008 and 2012, that is Black women that delivered the presidency. You know, 76% of African-American women were registered to vote, with 70% of them voting, according to the Center for American Progress.
So why would young African-American women between the ages of 19 and 25 stay home on Election Day?
Well, sometimes they don't understand the power of voting and what voting is and how it impacts their day-to-day life.
Black Girls Vote is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization.
We have Republicans, we have Democrats, we have Independents, we have folks who are the Green Party, but we advocate for things that we truly believe will improve our quality of life. We support who supports us, but also we need to understand the power of unity and coming together and demanding change.
During the primary elections, the group passed out umbrellas to encourage voters to go to the polls even if it was raining. They called daycare providers to arrange late-hour services so mothers could vote after work.
We were blessed with an opportunity and partnership with Lyft, which is the driving company. And so what we did here in the city of Baltimore, we lifted people to the polls for free, meaning that let's take away the excuses.
The grassroots organization meets women where they are, in stores, hair salons, restaurants, and college campuses. At Brightwood College in Baltimore, Maryland, group members are reaching out to young eligible female voters, explaining the registration process, and showing them the connection between their votes and their everyday life. As an example, Robinson points to how who they elect to the local council could affect the government response to a murder in their neighborhood.
Whether it's street police patrolling in that community, whether it's lights in that park across the street from me, or whether it's more economic opportunities for African-American men, that's tied to policy. Because every single day, politics happen, every single day, in every single aspect of our life.
Kiara Banks, who is studying at Brightwood College to become a certified medical assistant, has never voted before.
I came today to get registered to vote and become a member of Black Girls Vote because I think it's time for a change.
Her classmate, Keisha Addison, is working full-time and raising three kids. She's been voting since she was 19. And for the upcoming elections, she's weighing which candidate will best help her and her community.
My main thing is education, because I have children that are in school, and I'm still currently receiving the education. Also, we've been having a lot of problems with the police brutality with our young men. So I would like to hear what they, how they feel about that and what they're going to do about it.
Addison is considering joining Black Girls Vote because she believes that younger women, like her 21-year-old daughter, should be more politically involved. Her daughter says she doesn't want to vote.
She just wanted someone that actually had a voice for the youth and was concerned about the voice of the youth. So I was telling her that regardless of who you vote for, you need to vote. The vote counts no matter where you put it.
To get that message across to the community, group members plan neighborhood events, like a campaign for class president for children in Kids Zone, a summer program.
If I'm Madam President, I will make every day a sports day. We will play soccer, football, kickball, but most importantly, basketball. With my connections, I will have Stephen Curry himself bring a private lesson to every kid, safe zone kid. Every day will be a pizza and ice cream party.
Want to teach them early, and so when they go home, they're going to say, Ma, I voted for the president today. Not president of the United States, but president of the Kids Safe Zone. So come November, when they hear about voting, Mom, you need to go vote too.
Group founder Nike Robinson says teaching younger generations about the democratic process is crucial to help them understand why their vote counts, how choosing candidates who represent their views can bring positive change to their communities. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
This is VOA.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated one quarter of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. Two-thirds of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
Let's head to New York City now, where business editor Jill Malandrino is telling us that a lot of interest is being focused on a resort in the state of Wyoming. Tell us more about it, Jill.
Yep. Well, you know, it's really interesting. There's kind of a thing out there where traders, did central banks dig us into a Jackson hole, which I realize sounds a little bit cheeky. But if we take a look at the action following Janet Yellen's comments, it really does show how volatility has come back into the market. Essentially, Yellen noted the case for an increase in Fed fund rates has strengthened in recent months, so she sounds a little bit more hawkish there, although there was no specific mention of timing for the next move. We have three more FOMC rate meetings in 2016, the next one on September 21st, so that's the next catalyst that we're looking at. And we saw risk assets move up higher across the board, so equity, stocks, bonds, commodity prices. But between 11 and 12 o'clock, equity sold off steeply to bring markets into the red for really no reason at all. It seems as if a switch just flipped. Again, a lot of this movement is on low volume because we have a lot of traders off for the next 2 weeks of Labor Day holiday. So when you have lower volume trading, moves tend to be exaggerated. But we were up about 0.7% on the S&P 500 following her speech. And now we're down about 0.25%. So there was a big divergence in traders' attitudes just within a couple of hours.
It's amazing how that volatility happened. Jill, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right, thank you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. Let's turn now to Apple. A new iPhone is expected to be announced in the next week or so, an iPhone 7, we think it's going to be called. International Edition's Lori London talks about new features we might see with Fortune.com journalist Chris Morris.
It looks like we're going to hear more about the next generation of iPhone probably sometime in early September. September 7th is the date that we're hearing most frequently, though Apple hasn't confirmed that just yet.
Any idea what the new iPhone, if it's an iPhone 7 or what it may be called and what it may have
Well, you know, it's interesting. Apple, when it was under Steve Jobs' watch, was a locked box, and there were very few rumors that slipped out. But lately, we've been hearing a lot about things long before the company announces them. Now, admittedly, these are all rumors, but here's what we're expecting. It looks like this is going to be a device that looks a lot like the iPhone 6 or the iPhone 6S. It'll have a better processor, of course. It'll have a better camera, of course. Those are two things that always get upgraded. There's been some talk of a dual-lens camera, which means better performance in low light and better detail of your shots. There's also a lot of talk that Apple is doing away with the standard headphone jack. Now, that'll make room for a second speaker. If you want to listen privately, though, Bluetooth headphones are one option, and there should be an accessory that plugs into the Lightning port, that's the charger, that would let you connect your wired headphones. Now, that's a big change, and it's not really a popular one, at least judging by the online reaction so far. Even Steve Wozniak, who was Steve Jobs' old partner, has said he'd be unhappy if Apple makes that move.
Wow, interesting. But now, this is all obviously speculation at this point. We don't know for sure if they're going to unveil a new iPhone, but it would seem like it's just about time.
Yeah, September is usually when they roll out the new line of iPhones and sometimes new line of iPads as well. It's sort of we're at the beginning right now of the holiday shopping season. Even though it's 100 degrees outside, the retailers and the companies are getting their holiday lineups ready for not only just Apple, but all of the companies out there. So you're going to see a lot of new high-tech, high-demand gizmos coming out probably in the next month or so.
Now, I know there's some new software also coming out. Has it already come out for Android users who are just absolutely committed to Android and they're not going to Apple?
And it hasn't, actually. It's called Nougat. It's the latest version of Android. Has over 250 new features. Now, the thing about whether it's out or not, Nexus is the phone line that always gets the updates first. Other providers, you could be waiting weeks or even months. The speed at which the manufacturers update really varies widely.
That's International Edition's Lori London with Fortune.com journalist Chris Morris on what we may expect on the iPhone 7. You've been listening to International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Educating girls is one of the most powerful instruments for reducing poverty and inequality. Nonetheless, some 62 million girls who should be attending school aren't. There are many reasons why girls are kept out of school. Sometimes the girl's family or community believe that she is more useful if she takes care of daily chores, such as fetching wood or water, or caring for her younger siblings. Sometimes the family has little money for school supplies and sends only the boys to school. Sometimes the girl herself has heard too often that girls aren't smart enough or deserving enough to go to school and takes this false message to heart. And in some cases, local norms forbid girls studying with male teachers. So if there are no female teachers, the girls are not allowed to attend school. That is the case in many parts of Afghanistan. Typically, girls are only allowed to attend classes taught by women. And in Afghanistan, there is a distinct lack of female teachers. That is why Let Girls Learn, a U.S. government-led initiative aiming to address the many challenges that prevent adolescent girls from attaining a quality education, is expanding its program in Afghanistan. In July, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, formed a partnership with the United Kingdom's Department for International Development, or DFID, to support a program that helps develop more female teachers in Afghanistan. USAID committed $25 million to help establish a teacher apprenticeship program for girls in grades 9 through 12. The idea is to begin preparing them to teach while they are still studying, and once they have graduated from school, move them directly into careers as teachers. In this way, they can help educate the next generation of Afghan girls. Educating and empowering girls is one of the core components of our effort to end extreme poverty and promote resilient, democratic societies with healthy, well-educated citizens. USAID and DFID are working together to help teenage girls in Afghanistan train as teachers so they can go on to teach future generations of girls and build a cycle of education that will raise all of Afghanistan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.